We are live. Will, what's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, you know, I'm hanging in there. Hello to everyone watching. This is our second MAGA Monday. It's very exciting.
Yeah, pretty exciting. Welcome to everyone. I'm Sam Stein, managing editor of The Bulwark. This is MAGA Mondays. We had conceived of this live show, 10 a.m. at Monday, as somewhat of a lighter fare, where we looked at the internet and decided what was silly over the weekend and what we could make fun of. Obviously, that's a little bit difficult when you're in the middle of a war. And for those who are going to say, oh, it's not a war, I saw Patrick Graffini and others, but it's not a war. Pete Hegseth called it a war, so we're going to call it a war.
They killed the president of the country, you know, yeah, the Ayatollah, you know, that's pretty that war.
Seems warlike. Yeah. So we're going to, in the spirit of the show, which is meant to look at the right-wing internet culture and what's happening over the weekend, we're actually going to look at how MAGA is reacting to what's happening in Iran. And Will, you could correct me if I'm wrong. I started the weekend thinking, okay, they're kind of contorting themselves. They're figuring out a way to get to supportive. And certainly there are definitely some people who are doing that. But what has surprised me, generally speaking, is the degree to which luminaries in this movement have basically said, we don't like this. This is fucked. We don't want this. This is not in the spirit of what Trump is doing or promising. And this is, you know, contradictory to the campaign messages he ran on. So I've been a little bit surprised by how much of that is out there.
I agree. I mean, I think in the first 24 hours, we saw a lot of this, you know, these kind of traditional dovish supposed people who are saying, you know, Trump's not going to invade Iran, whatever. They were saying, you know, I think they liked the initial splash and the spectacle. I mean, it kind of recalled the Maduro raid where people go, oh, wow, you know, I guess Trump just keeps winning. But on Sunday, I think we started to see, as after American soldiers were killed and we start seeing more of these missile attacks, I think we're seeing people say, you know, there is, I think, a pretty significant voice on the right opposed to the war on day two. Right. And so where is this headed? You know, if they're talking about 4 or 5 weeks, I think there's going to be more and more of that.
Yeah, I would say the sort of crystallizing video for a lot of people was not actually someone who speaks out all that much, although if you watch Steve Bannon's show, you'll see him regularly. But it's someone who is widely associated with thirsting for wars because he runs private contractors who benefit financially from them. And that's Eric Prince, who has been around for decades. Everyone knows him from the Iraq War. He was on, I think it was Bannon's show, am I right? Or I'm trying to remember who
yeah.
it was.
Yeah,
he was on Bannon's show. And so he comes out. And he says this, and this was kind of shocking, because if anyone's supposed to be thirsting for the war, it's these types of figures. So here's Eric Prince.
I'm not happy about the whole thing. I don't think this was in America's interest. It's going to uncork a significant can of worms and chaos and destruction in Iran now. Who takes over? You still have tens, hundreds of thousands of IRGC people that will be positioning to be number two, to be the next rulers of that country. I don't see how this is in keeping with the president's MAGA commitment. I'm disappointed.
Okay, that was mind blowing for me.
That's, you know, Ares, the god of war, there weighing in saying, you know, I'm not so sure about this one. I mean, I do think one thing to note here about Eric Prince is I'm curious about how his Gulf connections are playing in here. I mean, I think it's he's been involved with the Emiratis and folks like that who are kind of caught in the middle here. And so I wonder how much that's rolling in where he's kind of, you know, he's like, I prefer these small proxy wars in Sudan or Yemen. And that's kind of messing with my paycheck.
Yeah, but also maybe. I'm not going to discount that people, I mean, especially people like Eric Prince are operating out of self-interest. That makes a lot of sense. But let me just sort of push back a little bit. Like the Bannon wing of this party, they do seem pretty much committed to isolationism around this stuff. I mean, maybe I'm misreading it a little bit. But this does seem to be something that they genuinely ran on and believed in. And, you know, it's the way that they separated themselves from traditional Republicans, people who supported the Iraq War. It's the way that they go about distinguishing themselves in Trump's brand of foreign policy. And so he's kind of tarnished that. And I do think they're grappling with this or having difficulty grappling with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think for someone like Steve Bannon, he wants, you know, he wants the deportations, he wants these other kind of populist MAGA things done. And then he looks at what we might consider like old school old school Republican things, like whether it's welfare cuts or in this case, kind of a classic Middle East quagmire war. And he's looking at that and saying, geez, you know, this looks like something that's going to detract from Trump's political capital. And that, you know, I think is what it's starting to look like.
Well, yeah, but and it's also like that's literally everything that Trump ran on in 2016, but that was how he distinguished himself from other Republicans. I mean, it's false, right? He said, I opposed the Iraq war. He had not. But that was such a focal point for that campaign that became defining from. I also say Bannon is a big horseshoe theory guy. He constantly wants to recruit disaffected liberals. It's how he got, you know, the connections to Kennedy and Gabbard. And part of that is that part of the connective tissue is running against foreign interventionism. I mean, that is inherent to what they offer. Let's listen to Bannon, and then I want you to react to him on the flip side of it.
I'm just going to be brutally frank. If it's going to be a hard slog, I mean, that was not pitched in the 2024 campaign. It just wasn't. We are going to bleed support.
I mean, is he right?
Is that Frank Gaffney? I think so.
I don't know.
That's like a pretty hawkish guy. Yeah, whoa. I mean, if that's who that is, I think it is. I mean, he's right. I mean, that this look, I mean, it's not even being pitched now, right? I mean, you know, they had this press conference this morning, and they're asked by very friendly conservative media outlets overall. They're saying, you know, okay, well, like, what's the plan here? What are we trying to accomplish? Fair question. And they say, we're not going to get into that. You know, I mean, I think Bannon is also reacting to the fact that, as you said, I mean, there's been no messaging on this. There's no sense of why we're doing this. This clearly, right. This thing that's already unpopular and is only going to get more unpopular.
Well, I'm being told that was indeed Frank Gaffney, which is just insane to me. What's going on here? The other sort of tentpole in the conservative MAGA movement that grew up around being opposed to foreign intervention in war is Turning Point USA, obviously. And, you know, they were grappling a lot with the first Iran strike. And that was sort of a tactical maneuver to take out the three nuclear sites in Iran. That I remember, and maybe you could recount this for me because my memory is a little bit faded on this stuff, but that was Charlie Kirk at the time alive was grappling with that in real time, if I recall correctly, and ultimately ended up being supportive of it, but I can't remember that much. But how is Turning Point now responding to what happened over the weekend?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, so much in the aftermath of the assassination, and part of this is based on Candace Owens. I mean, it has focused on where was Charlie Kirk in terms of war in the Middle East? Where was he on Israel? And so I think people are kind of fighting over that Charlie Kirk legacy after this war, where people like Andrew Colbert, who is sort of Charlie Kirk's sort of heir apparent, who is like his right-hand man, are saying, you know, well, you know, I think I heard that, you know, Iran was building dirty bombs and they were going to get all these crazy missiles from China. But for some reason, the administration isn't saying that. And so people are sort of sifting through these Charlie Kirk clips where, you know, sometimes Charlie Kirk is saying, I trust Trump to do whatever he wants with Iran. And then, you know, people opposed to the war are saying, well, you know, here's Charlie Kirk saying, you know, we need to distance ourselves from Israel.
Yeah, there is a lot of that. It's sort of legacy fighting. But like, honestly, and you know this world better than I do. I mean, maybe we don't have a poll, obviously, but like the people who make up Turning Point USA, the people who go to these conferences, the people who are officers with the organization, how do they genuinely feel about this stuff? Do we know?
I mean, I think we're seeing this kind of, I think there's kind of like an overall effort to kind of whip people into line on the message and support the war. But I think individually, I think we're seeing the same thing we're seeing from Bannon, where it's this kind of like reluctance, this effort, this combination of like, well, I don't really like this war. And also I think it's really not being messaged right. And right. So, you know, if these people who are kind of hardcore MAGA people are ambivalent about it, I think they're then realizing, well, geez, independent voters probably really don't like this.
Yeah. So there's a couple clips from Kirk. We're going to play one. I'm going to actually read one we're not going to play, which gets to, I think, the sort of the way in which they have been prior to this trying to, I don't know, contort themselves into figuring out a way to support Trump. So this was obviously a while ago. Kirk was asked or was talking about Iran. He said, Iran is hugely diverse, massive country. Do the people agitating for war even know that? This, of course, is in the lead up to the first strikes against Iran. Because be clear, regime change is war. This is Kirk again. Just to understand, regime change is not like changing the head coach at the Chicago Bears. It's not how it works. I'm not sure about that analogy, but whatever. Now, he did end up getting to a place, like I said, where he was like, well, okay, you know, if Trump's going to do this tactical bombing of these nuclear sites, I can support him because it's Trump. So let's listen to where Kirk ultimately ended up on that first strike.
Two things he said 10 years ago. Iraq war was a bloody catastrophe and a disaster, and it'll never happen again, and Iran cannot get a nuclear weapon. Only President Donald Trump can hold both those things in his hands. Only President Trump, with prudence and practicality and wisdom, is able to weigh them both, thread the needle, and walk the tightrope. President Donald Trump is a man made for this moment.
The swelling music.
Yeah. Well, first of all, absurd. Multiple people can hold both those thoughts at the same time. It doesn't take President Trump is not the only person who can process these two things at the same time. But that did get that did underscore the ability for these people to sort of say, well, you know, in Trump we trust, more or less. Are we seeing that now, though?
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously that's an old clip, but I think that kind of hits a lot of the messaging we're seeing from the pro-Trump, pro-war people of essentially trust the plan. And, you know, I think partially that's because they don't really, the administration's not giving them anything more to work on. We don't know.
What is the plan?
Well, I guess trust Trump. You know, Matt Walsh, I believe at the Daily Wire, who, I mean, one thing to keep in mind here is a lot of these Republican pundits that we're seeing now, I mean, they were growing up during the Iraq war or they were, you know, in college. They saw how the W. Bush administration was really undermined by the Iraq war. No. And so
the Iraq war was 20 years ago, over 20 years ago. They were babies.
Not like Matt Walsh. I mean, he's like older than Matt me. Walsh. I mean, yeah, I mean, maybe like people are like Brylin Hollyhand.
Yeah, but people. we gotta talk about Brylin a little bit, but go ahead.
So, but I think these people are saying some of them, you know, in Matt Walsh's case, he's saying like, look, like a war in the Middle East is a very serious and complex thing. We've seen this go south relatively recently. Trump is not explaining how it's going to be good this time. On the other hand, you have people saying, you know, essentially, you know, you know, I don't know if we have the Will Chamberlain tweet, but you know, Will Chamberlain.
Let's put it up. Says, it's too good. Here it is. This is the most ridiculous. This is the most ridiculous spin I saw online all weekend. Here it is. The point of being against regime change wars was not that the regime change is inherently bad, but rather that our political and military leadership couldn't pull it off in an efficient, effective manner. When the facts change, you should change your mind. It's so absurd.
Isn't this the military that was too woke like a year ago that was just focused on pronouns and now it's totally different? I mean, that's kind of the language and the what we're seeing a lot is like, yes, traditionally a war in the Middle East is a bad idea. We're going to get bogged down. But you have to keep in mind, Trump's just he's built different, you know, and
he's just
and
too good at it.
Yes. And they're just going to do too well.
I got to be honest. And it's not just Chamberlain. So this is the. It's like the version of this was the messaging from official government channels. So the House Foreign Affairs Republicans put up this tweet, which he's ending forever wars. I can't even
start.
President Trump is ending the forever war that Iran was waged. Okay, so he's ending forever wars by waging war that will end the one war to end the forever wars, basically.
Yeah, so it says essentially Trump – you know, he was elected to end the forever wars, and indeed he is. Now, what we didn't expect was that it would be a new war. But, you know, this is going to be a short war to end the forever war.
It's so ridiculous. I will say these tweets, especially that House Foreign Affairs one, that's where it started. And so that's why when we were initially planning out this week's show, I was kind of convinced that it was going to be a show about how people were more or less figuring out a way to get to yes, but that's not really true. And what you're seeing is a lot of anger bubbling up between certain factions, rivalries that are clearly burning hot, traditional ones too. So like we have the Candace Owens tweet, Yasha Ali and his context of it. Let's show that when we can. But, like this is Candace doing her thing. It's well, that's not the one I was hoping for. I was hoping for the Yasha Ali one. Let's try to get the Yasha Ali one. She basically says that they murdered Charlie to do this war.
Yes.
And then there's the other one, which is the Marjorie Taylor Greene Laura Loomer feud. So, Will, as we pull up the
this is a long MTG running feud.
Why don't you explain what's going on?
Not
here?
Fans of each other. Sure. So basically, Laura Loomer is very pro-Israel, very pro any kind of military intervention in support of Israel. Marjorie Taylor Greene, not a fan. She is, you know, kind of in this kind of America first, you know, isolationist mold. And so they're really going at each other over, you know, over this issue.
And MTG like spent the weekend just basically going after her, calling her names. If we can pull up the MTG tweet here. Yeah. it's a opus here, basically. You can see there's a lot of anger. They don't like each other.
Loomer said, you know, thanks to the American soldiers for their sacrifice who died. And then MTG says, this bitch is celebrating the death of American military members and thanking their families for their blood sacrifice. Yeah. And then she said, and just two more sentences here. She says, Loomer lost two congressional races because no one respects her or values her enough to elect her. But this is who Trump takes late night calls from and laps up her praise and worship. And I think actually that's a pretty good point from MTG. I mean, she's saying, I think, to other Republicans, look, Laura Loomer is someone we can recognize as unhinged and right. kind of a crazy person. And not only is she on Twitter, but Trump is taking her advice about national security. He's firing people on the National Security Council based on what she says. So I think it's a pretty compelling point.
Yeah. I mean, Loomer does have incredible access. She's had incredible sway over personnel. And frankly, if this is a MTG versus Loomer bat, I mean, Loomer's winning it, right? I mean, MTG is retired. She was spending the weekend going nuts, saying this is a complete abandonment of MAGA and America First. But she seems to be on the outskirts. Trump is obviously not listening to her. He went down to her district. Didn't he celebrate her, the fact that she was retiring, call her crazy?
Yeah, he pushed her out. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's hard to argue that Loomer's losing this one. It seems quite obvious that she's winning. The other thing I want you the thing that I'm kind of curious for your thoughts on is Tucker Carlson in all this. Like, he obviously is opposed to the war. He was freaking out about the possibilities that was going to happen. He was at the White House, like, as they were essentially planning this thing, talking to the president. Like, what does that say about Carlson?
I mean, I think that says he has no clout, or at least not on this issue. I mean,
Him to the White House, I guess?
Well, you know, Dave Rubin speculated that Tucker was being called in to get a scolding and told to be nicer to Mike Huckabee. And perhaps he was right. I mean, I think, you know, I don't know if they give him a token, you know, okay, you get to make one more case against the war meeting. I think it does show that, you know, I think there's a lot of energy in right-wing media for people like Tucker, for people like Nick Fuentes, these kind of Candace Owens, these more isolationist figures. However, I think in terms of like who has Trump's ear and who's making decisions at the Defense Department, clearly I think it's in a much more kind of traditional, pro-Israel faction of the Republican Party.
Has Tucker spoke? I didn't see anything from Tucker over the weekend. Did you see?
I haven't seen a response. I don't think I've seen a response from him yet, but okay. I expect he's not going to be happy about it.
No, not likely. Okay, we do have the Yasher tweet. I want to get back to the Candace Owens stuff because this is where Vera's totally into the conspiratorial. Yasher. Got to hand it to her. The devil works hard, but Candace works harder. In the midst of the war, she keeps things focused on business. So Candace is basically saying Jews murder Charlie Kirk so they could get this war. That's what she's saying.
Exactly. And as Yasher points out here, I mean, she also has a business objective here, which is for her Erica Kirk series, which we talked about, to not be overshadowed by the war.
I forgot about the Erica Kirk series. Where are we on that? What installment have we had?
Episode 3 just launched on Friday. You know, apparently Erica Kirk's mom's notary had some business issues.
Oh, God. If people haven't seen the first video that of the series, Will, Tim, and I did a recap of it. It's highly anti-Semitic, to say the least. Some of the theories don't really pan out, including discussion of Erica Kirk being pictured in a bee outfit as a toddler, and I don't know how that relates to Charlie Kirk's death.
And it all led up to this. Bombs over Iran.
Oh, now it makes sense. Yeah, she was there as a bee. One other feature that I want to talk about before we get to Ian Miles Strong is just Twitter as sort of an apparatus to, you know, consume war news. I don't know about you, but like, it's really hard. I mean, the outlet is just a flaming mess. And there's videos all over the place. Some of them are gruesome and awful. And then some of them are just like, is this real? And I spent a lot of my time over the weekend just being like, is the thing I'm seeing real? And it's I don't know. Obviously, the website sucks, but, you know, there's just not really any other real way to consume news at that speed. So how are you handling it?
Yeah, I mean, it's really difficult, as you said. I mean, it's obviously the combination of AI. I mean, Twitter itself is just kind of busted. Like the search function, you know, after some of these attacks in Dubai, once that first broke, I was searching Dubai and it's like, all right, here's a 15-year-old tweet about Dubai, you know, as one of the top results. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's a mess. And I mean, there are so many of these disinformation accounts that really flourish. Because in the past, you know, you could be like, all right, well, this guy has like 500 followers. It's probably fake. But, and of course, you know, obviously you can buy a verified checkmark. So I think it has become a real mess.
Yeah, and then, you know, you want to get the For You feature because you can't follow everybody and you're looking for new information. But like, if you're doing the For You feature, it's just like, oh, is this tweet from today even? And then you look at it and it's like, this account is not, it's anonymous and, you know, they're telling me something I haven't seen anywhere else. So then you have to, like this morning, there was one Iranian account that was like, Benjamin Netanyahu's chief of staff is dead. It's like, I had to like look for it. And it just absolutely was not true.
I mean, one interesting aspect, I think, is how the Iranians are clearly capitalizing on this. I mean, there are a lot of Iranian accounts that will say, like, they sank the USS Ford or the Lincoln, you know, they've sank an aircraft carrier. And then you have to kind of look back and obviously that's not true.
Yeah. All right. So in the midst of all the horror, and there is a lot of horror, there were two funny things that stood out. We'll do Lindy Lee next. But first, we're going to get to Ian Miles Chong.
Can I preface this?
Sure.
So obviously, Ian Miles Chong is a Malaysian man who, through video games, became extremely crazed about American culture war issues. And this is going to kind of touch on the internet transnational MAGA Dubai thing, because people like Andrew Tate as well, they love hanging out in Dubai, but obviously they're under fire here now as well.
Why do they like hanging out in Dubai? Just it's like a poppin' city, lots of clubs.
I think extradition, at least in Andrew Tate's case. But yeah, I mean, I think a city where there's no rules. You know, I actually lived in Dubai in elementary school. And so, you know, this was before it, yeah, for a few years. And so this is before it got really crazy. But, you know, but I know a bit of this nightlife as well.
Wait, no, you don't. You were there as a child.
I'm just kidding.
What are you talking about?
I was there before it got too crazy, but now Ian's walking.
But it's in your blood. Once you're there, you're just obviously you exude it. So when you watch this video, I just want you to imagine Will's actually slightly off frame. Never actually pictured in the video with Ian Miles Chong, but he was there in spirit. All right, let's watch it.
People said this looked like a Blockbuster. The Twitter checks are hitting so good.
Okay, so I just want to say you didn't see the text, but the tweet is, it's 3 a.m. in a Dubai club right now and the place is alive. You can't beat this city. Can we play this again? I want to play it one more time because I want to talk over the commentary. All right, let's play. There we go. Can they do a little bit more? Can they get into it a little bit more than this?
This kind of looks like the budget one. I got to be honest.
Pause it. Can we pause it on that guy sitting here? Pause it. No, go back. I want to pause it on the guy sitting at the table. Does that guy look alive or what? This place is alive. That guy looks
alive. This guy can't even look up from his phone. They've got dry ice.
What is going on that table? What do we got there?
They got a bunch of cans of ginger ale.
Is that ginger ale? Yeah, it looks like ginger ale. The people holding up the flames are not into it either. They're just doing this.
No. The bottle.
They're dressed like cruise ship staffers. What is going on?
Like I'm saying, people said Blockbuster employees. I do think maybe Ian is not going to the sort of like the Andrew Tate club. Maybe he's a couple rungs below that.
There's no one there, and this poor dude who has to hang out with Ian and Miles Chong clearly wants to go to bed. He's so tired looking. These staff, they are just like, get me away from this flame and all that smoke coming off the table. All right, let's keep playing.
Okay. Giving him straws.
All right, pause. Does that look like a man who's just living it?
Doesn't look like a man who's half dead, you know, chasing experimental medical treatments in Dubai.
This place is alive, he writes. Yeah, alive.
It kind of looks like a hotel lobby, like that lamp behind him. Like it's not giving like crazy nightclub.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, it's obviously a difficult time for Dubai. I don't want to be there for that reason. But even if it were not, you know, in the middle of a widening Middle East war, this looks like hell to me. I would never want to do that. 3 a.m. at that club. Sounds
there
awful.
Is actually an interesting wrinkle here, which is that Ian was investigated in his native Malaysia because it's illegal to support Israel, even rhetorically. And so at one point there was a police investigation of him. Yeah, because after October 7th, he tweeted like, you know, I hope Israel gets revenge. Someone filed a complaint. There was a police complaint against him. So in some ways, this is all kind of, you know, he's been very enmeshed in this. Maybe that's why he lives in Dubai now.
Maybe. All right. The other funny thing that happened over the weekend, I guess funny only to me and you because she fascinates the two of us. Oh, no, it's funny for everyone who works in Democratic politics and probably a lot of old Biden staffers. Lindy Lee, before we do this, set up who Lindy Lee is.
Yeah, Lindy Lee is a sort of longtime Democrat or was a longtime Democratic fundraiser who I think it's fair to say sort of exaggerated her importance. People would, she would often be like, it's like, you know, big time Democrat. And, you know, she would get in all these Twitter fights. And after Trump was elected, she did a sort of the Democrats have gone crazy. I'm a Republican now. This pivot in that moment where it was sort of like it looked like Trump was going to rule for 100 years. And so now she's become a conservative pundit.
Yeah, she was on Fox repeatedly as the ex-Biden official who had turned on Biden or turned on the Democrats and had become a Trumper. Anyway, she came up and, you know, this week and she was not happy. We're going to put the tweet up of her to show she's not a fan of this war. Charlie Kirk is sorely missed today. I'm so America first that I am America only now because of our own house is not in order. I spoke with President Trump Brown on in 2016, 2020. She did not. In 2024, no regime change wars. Praying for our beloved country today and for our valiant troops. If you lost Lindy Lee, this is like, you know, it's like a Cronkite moment probably for Trump, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, this is someone that even a lot of people on the right are like, this lady's a grifter. You know, she's clearly just going with wherever the wind blows. And as a result, I think that it's a sign that she's abandoning ship.
Yeah. Now, who's the, like, I forget his name already, but who's the wannabe Charlie Kirk, who wears all the polos?
Brylan Hollyhand.
We've written about Brian a fair bit. He was getting into like a lot of war cheerleading this weekend and talking about how great it was, right?
Yeah, I think he's a big pro-war guy. He's putting out the video saying, you know, brace yourselves, America. I mean, now that's a guy who definitely was not alive for the first Iraq war.
No.
You know, I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing about him because clearly he's doing this kind of like old MAGA punditry or even like old, like, you know, old.
That's not even MAGA. It's Republican. Yeah. It's like, yeah, freedom isn't free and shit like that. I did like how everyone basically responded to him with a link to like go enlist.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it is like this guy's like, I think like 22, 23. I mean,
prime age. What are you doing, buddy? Stop making videos. Yeah. He would be like, yeah, he's like, we're going to hunt him down. This is awesome. Rah, rah. It's like, yeah, here you go. Go in this, buddy. All right. But in all seriousness, just to wrap it up, we're going to finish on Sneeko, an internet personality extraordinaire, does a lot of streaming. I want to wrap this up in a serious way because look, this is Trump's bait, not Sneeko, but like MAGA online personalities really did rally around Trump. And to the degree that they are discomforted by what's happening over the weekend, it really matters. This is a huge component of his political support. They don't seem to be on board with what's going on. This is, of course, happening when traditionally support for the operation should be at their highest, right? We took out Khomeini. There is, you know, early success. It's only going to get messier from here. And so if they are not comfortable with what's happening now, then I would argue that Trump is, I don't know, in a little bit of trouble. And so that's why I think this is important. He has a lot of political capital with his crew, so we'll see. But this is not, it wasn't a particularly great development for him over the weekend. I don't know if you feel the same way.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think we're seeing this, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head there in terms of the fact that these right-wing media figures are very influential. And if you start this drumbeat of like, we hate Trump, Trump got us into this forever war, they probably toss in some anti-Semitism. You know, Sneeko was the guy doing one of the Hail Hitler dance with clavicular back.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think particularly with Gen Z Republicans, there's going to be this alienation. And I think it could be a real problem for Trump. I mean, and particularly, I mean, we have the midterms coming up, but I think what we're seeing sort of throughout this video is this dissatisfaction among a lot of different swaths and factions on the right.
Yeah. So we've touched base and then we'll play Sneeko in a second, but Steve Bannon, Eric Prince, they're, you know, that faction really came out forcefully. We didn't play him. Alex Jones did come out and was, you know, we're talking about the real nutters. Then you have, you know, the Candace Owens, Turning Point USA types. Obviously, they're at loggerheads, but Candace, again, conspiratorial nutter who wants nothing to do with this. But the TPUSA folks were not on board totally. So that's a couple factions already. Then you have Marjorie Taylor Greene warring with Laura Loomer. So then you have factionalism there as well. And then you have the kind of like not totally political heavy focused internet personalities. So let's play Sneeko here. Again, highly problematic character. But this is him just, you know, people listen to this guy. So let's play what he said.
He's 80 years old. Trump is 80 years old and would rather sacrifice his own citizens. He would rather bring us into another war in the Middle East, identical to the others that we've seen over the past several decades, because he does not want his reputation to be tarnished by the blackmail footage being released from Epstein Island. That's what type of man is in charge of our country right now.
Okay, there's nothing to coming, but yeah. The Epstein thing was a little wild. But look, there's nothing, literally nothing. I mean, not literally nothing, but there's not no real evidence to say he's doing this to distract from Epstein. I mean, anything could be a distraction from Epstein. But this is how people in that universe view this stuff. I'm very curious to see where Rogan, for instance, picks up on this stuff, or Andrew Schultz, or any one of those people.
That's right. I mean, like, I think these kind of manosphere people are going to be very dissatisfied with it. I mean, look, I mean, you know, I hate to say Sneeko has a point there, but I mean, when he's saying, you know, that, you know, he's sending people off to die for this war that they haven't really even explained, you know,
right.
They don't feel that we deserve a justification for it. I mean, I think, you know, he's right on there. And, you know, I do think just briefly, there was this, because this is the manosphere people, I think, are going to be flaking off, and the people who watch these comedy podcasts. I think, you know, there was this California Republican woman who said, you know, this is good. We need a purge. We need only the loyalists supporting Trump. And at that point, you know, when you're saying it's good that you're losing support, I don't think things are working out for you.
It's not good. And I'll just note, Trump's been making these phone calls to reporters. First of all, I'd be very interested to see if he starts calling into these personality shows, right? Because that would be a single that
call into MAGA Monday.
I would love that, Donald. Come on. But he called the Post and he's just like, look, I don't care about the polling. I'm just doing what's right. When you're saying that, to your point, it means like, you know, things are not going to go great. And we'll see. I mean, we will see. If you're starting out where basically a good solid chunk of your base is not happy and they're just holding on and trying to make rationalizations like, you know, Chamberlain did, which is that basically only you could do this, you know, like that, then you're in a bad place. So anyways, we'll be following it. Will's going to be writing about this, folks. So you should be subscribing to his newsletter already. But if you're not, it's False Flag. Subscribe to our YouTube feed to support our MAGA Mondays. I hope this is worth it. It's a good way to start the week, I assume. You learn things like Will was raised in the mean streets of Dubai. And that's why he's a club hound.
In the hookah.
Smoking the hookah at 3 a.m. Party of his life. All right. Will, thanks for doing this, man. I really appreciate it. For those who are watching, thank you for tuning in. It's an early show, but we love it. Hope you support it. Subscribe to The Bulwark, and we'll keep bringing you this type of interesting fare. Take care.